Part 1. My background and early life. Family background of my mother. Rosemarie Köhler. My mother was born June 19, 1908, in Oberhausen, Germany, some 30 miles north of Düsseldorf. She had a slightly older brother, Stefan Heinrich, my uncle Heini, and a slightly younger sister, Gertrud, my aunt Trude. Oberhausen is located in the heart of what is known in Germany as the Ruhrgebiet, surrounded by other towns like Essen, Duisburg, and Mülheim-Ruhr. The Ruhr River flows through this area and into the Rhine River near Duisburg. This area was known as the Kohlenpot, or Kohlpot, because of its many coal mines. It also was home to many steel mills. The iron ore came by train or ship on the Ruhr River, and the coal fired the steel mills to produce high-quality steel. Many of the men in the area worked in the coal mines or the steel mills. The many job opportunities in this industry also attracted workers from other parts of Germany, as well as neighboring Poland and other nearby countries. The result of this influx of workers at the end of the 18th century was that the area had a good mix of people of different nationalities compared to other parts of the world where there was less mobility. People usually married their friend from across the street, which in other more homogeneous places may have created problems. However, in this part of Germany, the mix of people coming from far away created physically and mentally healthy and strong men and women. Most of them worked in coal mines, steel mills, and other factories, and as such, represented a large and strong blue-collar community. My grandparents from my mother's side were Heinrich Köhler, my opa, and Rosalie Maria Köhler, my Oma. I do not know much about my grandmother Oma Köhler's background. Like most people in the area at that time, she had an elementary school education and came from a town named Krefeld, about 10 miles east of Oberhausen. I believe that her family had some involvement in the textile business. I understand that Oma Köhler was a fine, quiet, and sensitive woman, with a strong Catholic background. She had several brothers and sisters, but I only heard about one of her sisters, Aunt Marischen Hutter, though, as we will see, had a strong influence on my Oma Köhler. My grandfather, Opa Köhler, was a much more colorful person. He grew up as one of 9 children in the nearby town of Essen, and also had an elementary school education. He joined the Krupp Steel Company in Essen when he was still a little boy. Krupp became famous when they produced the largest artillery guns for the First World War. One of those big guns was a super-heavy howitzer called Dicke Bertha, Big Bertha, which later became the namesake for one of Callaway's best golf clubs, a fact with which few Americans are familiar. Krupp is a large multinational company to this day. Even though Opa Köhler was just a simple worker, he was very proud of Krupp, and very likely was a good, hard worker. Over the next few pages, I will describe how my mother experienced the environment in which she grew up. I know this largely from my mother's frequent storytelling. She told these stories over and over again. They influenced her as she experienced them and grew up with them. And those stories also shaped me as I heard them repeated frequently during my formative years. I experienced some of those stories myself during the last 6 years of Opa's life. I was 16 years old when he died in 1952. Even though Opa Köhler had only a limited education, he was a natural entrepreneur with great instincts and a sixth sense for opportunities to make money. When his parents died, he inherited a small sum of money, which he used, along with a big mortgage, to buy a building on Grenzstrasse in Oberhausen. The building had a pub and a bowling alley on the ground floor, and some 3 apartments on the upper floors. Opa Kulle was obsessed with making money and paying off the mortgage on his building. He did this in many different ways. He added several small apartments. He estimated the cost of building an additional apartment and the anticipated rental income and calculated the likely percentage of return. He started a herring marinating facility in his backyard. The fish arrived in large, unrefrigerated railroad wagons from the nearby Netherlands. The summer sun hit the railroad cars, threatening to spoil the fish. Opa Kulle would phone the fish company, offering to buy the fish at a substantial discount. In most cases, he got the herring at his price.
When he got the fish, he would hire some young woman to clean the herring, that is, cut off the head and tail and clean the inside of the fish. My teenage mother would lead the group and assure that they finished in time so that there was no overtime payable to the other workers. She was very proud of that. The herring was put into cans and sold to other pubs within some 10 miles around. This distribution was also done by my mother, initially using horse and carriage, and later by automobile. My mother was the first woman in the town of Oberhausen to get a driver's license and actually drive a car. Opa Kulle sometimes bought and sold horses, and once even a corpse car was the object of his trade. As more people owned automobiles, Opa Kulle added a gas station and managed the residual gas in the hose.
Life in Opa Kulle's pub. In spite of all these commercial endeavors, Opa Kulle's main business was a pub and bowling alley. He served only premier brand beers and made sure that the beer had the correct temperature and was properly served. He had an electronic shooting range in the pub, where his guests could compete. Of course, he charged for each shot. His billiard table, 3-ball European pool, was of the highest quality. The bowling alley was the center of entertainment and a driver for sales of food and beverages. It was a European bowling alley. At the beginning, it was only about a foot wide and then widened out to a diamond-shaped target with 9 pins. There was only 1 pin right and left, 2 in the second and fourth row, and 3 in the middle. The most difficult shot was to take out either the extreme right or the extreme left pin without hitting any of the other 8 pins. It was the first bowling alley in town that met federal standards. It was perfect and high class.
The gentleman from Babcock. Once each week, the Herren von Babcock came to bowl. This was a major social event. The group was led by Herr Eschenhauer, who was a Prokurist, which in German is similar to a vice president of an American corporation. It was a group of about 12 men, all more juniors than Herr Eschenhauer. Occasionally, the gentlemen brought along their wives. My teenage mother served them as the waitress. Her father, Opa Kulle, taught her many things. For example, 1 minute after a glass was empty, she had to ask the guest whether he wanted one more. When a beverage was served, the glass had to be held and carried in the middle of the glass or by the bottom of the glass. The important point was to avoid touching the upper inch of the glass, which is the area where the guest puts his mouth to drink. This makes even more sense today than it did at that time almost 100 years ago. Yet even better restaurants do not always follow that guideline. Also, a fresh glass of beer must have about 1/2 inch of white foam, a head at the top, to increase the appeal to the eye of the guest. As a result of serving as a waitress,
My mother was privy to many conversations at the bowling alley. She told me many stories about those events when the wives were present. The main point always was hove, those wives, through their behavior, could advance or destroy the careers of their husbands. Their behavior differed in terms of the content of conversation, the way in which they spoke, and, particularly, their table manners. This was one way for my mother to encourage me to behave properly. The local soccer club used Opa Cooler's pub as their clubhouse. Before matches, they changed into their soccer outfits in the restrooms of the pub. After matches, they washed up and changed back into their civil clothing. There was a piano at the bowling alley, which my mother mastered at a young age. When the players returned from the soccer field, she had to play the hits of the day. Opa Kula thought the music would put them into a good mood, and that they might have a few beers. This usually vort, even if they had lost the game. Opa Kula did not speak proper German. He had particular problems with the use of mir and mich, me. Or, one might say, he did not have any problem with it, because he always said mich, which, of course, was sometimes correct and sometimes not. Once, one of the younger, well-educated gentlemen from Babcock, who did not have much money yet, made fun of Opa Kula because of his problems with mir and mich. Opa responded by saying, "Why don't you and I go to the bank, and then you say, 'Geben Sie mir 1,000 Mark,' correct German meaning, 'Give me 1,000 marks.' I will say, 'Geben Sie mich 1,000 Mark,' incorrect German meaning, 'Give me 1,000 marks.' And then let us see who gets the money." In those days, 1,000 marks was a lot of money, and it was clear that the young man would not get such a large amount of money from the bank. The story shows Opa's sense of logic and humor. Opa Kula always thought about money and huff to earn it. His wife, my Oma Kula, was very religious. She once responded to him by quoting the Bible, where it says, "Look at the birds in the sky. They do not sow and they do not harvest, but the Father in heaven feeds them anyway." Opa Kula responded, "But they must fly an awful lot to get the food." My mother's mother, Oma Kula, ensured that my mother went to church regularly, even as a very young girl, maybe at age 6 or so. The church is the Herz Jesu Kirche in Oberhausen, which still exists. To this day, whenever I am in the area, I go inside and pray, thinking of my mother. As a result of her upbringing, my mother was very serious about her religion. Not only did she go to church regularly, but she also prayed every day for people in need and for other life situations to improve. Opa Kula was pleased to see my mother grow up as a good Christian person. He said, "Ein Weib muss Religion haben," which means, "A woman must have religion." My mother wanted very much to go to a higher school, such as the Gymnasium, which is a 9-year high school. However, Opa Kula told her that women do not need higher education, and that was the end of it. My mother suffered a lot because of this decision. My mother did not talk much about the early activities of her sister, my Aunt Truda. However, I heard many stories about her brother, my Uncle Heini. Opa Kula wanted him to go to the Gymnasium, but Uncle Heini did not want to. Opa Kula spoiled Uncle Heini in every way, giving him whatever he wanted. When Uncle Heini became a young adult, he simply took the money from his father's pub and spent it on cars and girls. When my mother became a young woman, Opa Kula wanted her to get married to a man with money so that she could live a good life. However, my mother did not like any of those men and stayed away from them.
Family background of my father, Wilhelm Riehl. My father was born May 15, 1902, in Mülheim, Ruhr. His father's name was Heinrich Riehl, hence my name, Heinz, a modern version of Heinrich,
or Henry.
I do not remember the first name of my father's mother. There were a total of 7 children, of which my father was the youngest. I know very little about the backgrounds of my grandparents from my father's side, because my father seldom talked about them. I just know that my Opa Heinrich Riehl founded a bakery in 1879 in Mülheim-Ruhr, Stirum, at 37 Landgrafenstrasse.
Stirum was a small Mülheim suburb with an even larger blue-collar population than in Oberhausen. Stirum and Oberhausen were only about 5 miles apart. One hardly noticed when one passed the city limit, going from one place to the other. My father began working in his father's bakery as a baker apprentice around 1916, when he was 14 years old. Following the apprenticeship, he became a certified baker, and a few years later, he successfully passed the test to become a master baker. I remember from my father's stories that he had a rather tough life. My father told me that he baked bread every morning. When a customer entered the store, a bell would ring in the living room. That was the signal for my grandmother, Oma Riehl, to go into the store and attend to the customer. It seems clear that not much bread was sold in the store, and therefore my father used horse and carriage to sell bread to stores in the nearby area within about a 10-mile radius. When his father, my Opa Riehl, died around 1931, my father had little choice but to take over the bakery. His brothers had other jobs and were not interested in the business. My father's sisters had gotten married, with the exception of Anna, who would play a role in my life a few years later. The family lived on produce grown in the rather large garden behind the house. They also had about a dozen chickens, some geese, ducks, and several pigs. I got the impression from my father that life was rather basic. There are 2 more things to mention. One is that Opa Riehl was a member of the Presbyterium, the elders,
of the Lutheran Protestant Church in Stirum,
today called the Emmanuel Church. He was able to see the church steeple from the back porch of his house. Each Sunday morning, he would stand on the porch fully dressed and ready to go to church, but he would not start walking until the bells began to ring at 9:15 for the 9:30 service. My father also had to go to church beginning at age 12 to prepare for his confirmation at age 14. I remember my father telling us that he had to pay attention to the pastor's sermon because later, at lunch, Opa Riehl would quiz him about it. As a result, my father was very familiar with the Bible and knew many psalms and songs from memory. The other point is that in the little spare time he had, my father was a tennis player. In fact, he was a co-founder of the Gutweiss Stadion Tennis Club, where I later began my tennis activities. In addition to Sundays, my father had his free day on Thursday afternoons. My father's hobby was photography. It would have been his dream in life to have a photo store. He was a good photographer and had his own darkroom where he could develop his photos in a few minutes. This was remarkable because other people would have to take their photos to a photo shop. There it would take about a week for the photos to be developed and returned. Yes, 1 week wait for photos to be returned. The other thing my father never tired of telling us was that at holiday dinners, the best parts of chicken, geese, or meat were always given to the Herren future sons-in-law.
These were the men who, hopefully one day, would marry my father's sisters. This explains, in part, why my father became a big eater once he was married to my mother and they had their own family.
1932. My parents meet, court, and marry. The railroad station in Stirum is located only about 1 mile away from the Riel Bakery, where my father lived. Near that railroad station, there also was a stop for the electric streetcar. One Thursday, his free day, in the summer of 1932, my father wanted to go by streetcar to nearby Oberhausen. As he walked up to the station, he noticed two attractive young ladies also waiting for the streetcar. Those two ladies were my mother, Rosemarie, and her sister, Trude. They had been at the Stadion Stirum, where there were 3 tennis courts and a very large swimming pool. Once they arrived in Oberhausen, my father invited the two ladies for some ice cream. He immediately liked my mother, who was 24 years old at that time and, according to him, wore a skirt not bigger than a handkerchief. At that time, my father Wilhelm and my mother Rosemarie agreed to see each other again 3 days later, on Sunday morning. They met at the park of Solbad Raffelberg in Stirum. During that meeting, Wilhelm took several photos of my mother, who loved to be photographed. Rosemarie asked Wilhelm when she might be able to see those photos. She was surprised when Wilhelm told her that he had his own dark room and could show her the photos in the afternoon of that same day. They agreed to meet again that afternoon and go to the movies. After that, things evolved rapidly. They met again the following Thursday, and 3 days after that, on Sunday, they met again and agreed to get married.
2-year courtship. I have to assume that Rosemarie and Wilhelm met mostly on Sundays and on Thursday afternoons, when my father had his time off. They may have seen an occasional movie, but most of the time they met in Oberkühler's pub. After all, this was easy for my mother to do, and there were beverages and some simple food. There were not many opportunities for them to be alone. My mother always liked flowers and plants. One of her favorites was a plant called in German a Gummibaum, which translated means gum tree. It grows to about 5 feet and has nice green leaves. One day, when my father was visiting in the pub, my mother asked whether he wanted to see the new leaf that the gum tree was growing. The plant was upstairs in one of the private rooms. My father expressed interest in looking at the new leaf because he sensed an opportunity to be alone with my mother for a few minutes. The problem was that my mother's little poodle, Pürzel, followed them. When my father embraced my mother, that dog started barking. My mother feared that the barking would alert her father in the pub below, and that was the end of that particular romantic moment. Many years later, on some Sunday morning, my mother told my father that her gum tree was getting a new leaf. My father said, "No, thank you. I am not interested in that new leaf." They explained the whole situation to me, and we all had a good laugh. Oberkühler liked my father as a person, but the materialistic side of him did not like the fact that my father was a baker and did not have much money. He kept pointing out to my mother several well-to-do, eligible gentlemen who would have loved to date and possibly marry her. These men were regular guests in the pub. My mother told Oberkühler that she loved my father. She also doubted Opa's judgment that all these men of means were really interested in her. But Opa said, "Ich kenn doch die Blicke," which means, "I know how they are looking at you."
1934, the marriage of Rosemary and Wilhelm.
Time passed, and Wilhelm and Rosemary wanted to get married.
The problem was that Wilhelm was Protestant and Rosemary was Catholic, which raised the question, how do we get married, Protestant or Catholic? This was a complicated question for several following reasons. As I have mentioned, my mother was very committed to her faith. The entire family clan, particularly the Hütter family, was Catholic. Oma Küller's closest friend was her sister Mariechen, who had no time for anything Protestant at all. In other words, the entire extended family insisted that my mother must marry Catholic, if she married that poor baker at all. In addition, when a Catholic marries a Protestant and converts to become Protestant, such a person is excommunicated and, according to Catholic belief, goes to hell. Likewise, my father was also very committed to his Protestant faith. Remember that his father had been an elder in the Protestant church. In addition, the plan was for Wilhelm and Rosemary to take over the bakery and the store. The entire neighborhood was Protestant. If he would marry a Catholic woman in a Catholic church and in a Catholic wedding ceremony, these people would no longer buy bread from the real bakery. In the end, the commercial arguments prevailed over the Catholic faith. On Easter 1934, a two-day holiday in Germany, they got married secretly in the Emmanuel Church in Sterum. The only people present at the ceremony were my mother's sister Truda,
one of my father's friends from Sterum.
There was no party of any kind. I understand that my mother cried her heart out for hours. They took a one-hour train ride to Cologne to visit the famous Catholic Cologne Cathedral, the Kölner Dom, and that was all. My mother's Küller family and the related Hütter clan were extremely upset and did not talk to Rosemary at all for 2 years. Even when Rosemary and Wilhelm went into her parents' house, the public pub, Opa Küller would simply throw them out. Rosemary continued to go on Sundays to her Catholic Herz Jesu church. When the related Hütter family members saw her there, they said, "You don't have to do that. Your soul is already burning in hell." It was not until I was born in May 1936 that the relationship between Rosemary and her parents was normalized again.
Life after marriage.
Wilhelm and Rosemary rented an apartment at Brunnenstrasse in Sturm, about 1 mile away from the house where Wilhelm grew up and worked. That house is still there, unchanged. He continued to work in the bakery, and Rosemary worked in the store and in the house. There was not much money available. My mother told me that she carried 2 buckets of hot butter every morning from her apartment at number 8 Brunnenstrasse to the bakery at Landgrafenstrasse. Brunnenstrasse has now been renamed to Friesenstrasse, but the house is still number 8. The butter and electricity to heat it up were included in the rent at Brunnenstrasse. Wilhelm's mother, my Omi Riel, was very ill and died later in 1934, a few months after my parents got married. There were arguments about the value of the house and bakery at 37 Landgrafenstrasse. Wilhelm and Rosemary wanted to buy out Wilhelm's brothers and sisters, but they wanted too much money for their shares. Finally, my father suggested that they should pay him the amount of money they were asking for, and then they should run the bakery. In other words, buy him out. Of course, they were not interested. So finally, there was agreement.
and Wilhelm and Rosemary bought out Wilhelm's siblings. By January 1935, my parents owned 37 Landgrafenstrasse and the bakery and store.
May 11, 1936. My birth.
Soon after Rosemary got pregnant, she developed a serious medical problem. Several doctors recommended an abortion. In addition, this medical problem was of such a nature that she would not be able to get pregnant again. She could never explain to me what the problem was. Not having an abortion and continuing the pregnancy would seriously endanger the life of Rosemary. There was also a good chance that I, the baby, would also die or would have some birth defect. So, not surprisingly, the doctors and my father all wanted to go ahead with the abortion. In spite of these opinions, Rosemary insisted on having the baby. Dvai she was on the operating table for the abortion to be initiated. Each time she told the doctors, "It is my body, and I want this child. If you go against my wishes, I will hold you responsible." At Christmas time, nuns came to the hospital to visit and pray with patients. My mother heard how the hospital nurse directed the visiting nun away from her room with the words, "You don't have to go there. She will get only half a baby." After a few weeks, Rosemary had to leave the hospital. The doctor said, "We give birth here to children. We cannot keep nursing you along for several months until May." So Rosemary went home and lay flat in bed to make sure that she would not lose the baby. As a result, she gained a lot of weight. I was born on Monday, May 11th, 1936, at approximately 5:30 in the morning. Later that day, the doctor came to my mother's room. Remember that there was no ultrasound or anything like that providing information about the condition of a baby before birth. My mother said, "Doctor, give it to me straight. Tell me what happened. I am prepared for the worst." The doctor responded, "Mrs. Riel, a gold medal. Your child is completely healthy." Remember that in May 1936, the Olympic Games were held in Berlin. People talked in Olympic metaphors. The American black sprinter, Jesse Owens, won several gold medals, very much to Adolf Hitler's chagrin.